Pescadero on the South Coast. This is Coastside Conversations, and guess what? We get to talk to Lynn Bowman again today. My name is Catherine Peary, and Lynn and I have talked about her wonderful new book, Brownies for Breakfast, which is actually coming out now. So let's talk about it some more. And I understand you've got some reviews on Amazon. People have started actually downloading the book as a ebook, and you've got your hard copy here, which is just gorgeous.
I do. It's been out for 5 days officially now. And in 5 days, we had well more than 1,000 downloads, free downloads of the book, which I'm thrilled about, and are in number one positions. And this is kind of bogus, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Number one in 7 or 8 categories on Kindle. And the reason I say that's bogus is because the whole publishing world now is based on these Amazon ratings and Amazon positions. Amazon owns publishing now.
Yeah.
Absolutely owns it.
As they do so many things. And we're not just talking the Washington Post here. We're talking books, right? We're just talking new books. I mean, the whole industry has changed.
Yeah, you cannot sell a book to any extent at all without Amazon. And in order to sell on Amazon, you have to do all these things that make you a success on Amazon. So,
but you're doing them, and one of them is, hey, you've gotten people to review your book.
Yes, we had, when I last looked, there were something like 24 reviews, and the only negative one, it was like a 3-star, and it was sweet because someone said, the print is way too small. And of course you want to say, you're reading it on your phone, dude. It's a cookbook. And some phones, right? Some phones don't allow you to zoom in, I guess. And so, but also the idea of that, you've just downloaded it free, by the way.
And on your phone, you're not going to be able to follow it very well, because the way that this is laid out, you've got pictures and text and pictures and
big
text.
Pictures.
And so this is
text.
This is meant to be your normal cookbook where you've got it by your stove or your range, and you've got it opened on something, and you're getting out your ingredients and you're, you know, chopping things or whatever, right?
In a perfect world, it stays right there on your counter, and you open it up and go. And another big issue for me is I want your husband, your mom, your kids to be able to open it up and go, let's make that thing you made last week. And
Or let's make this gorgeous looking donut, you know,
because
the pictures are amazing. They're
and
just fabulous.
The whole idea of brownies for breakfast is a very cheap, okay, Hollywood kind of appeal.
Except that in this case, it's a very nutritious brownie that really is good for breakfast.
That's the whole idea, that this food is food that you can give your children with absolutely no guilt, that you can eat.
And
with,
should be
and
giving
should
your children.
Be eating,
yes.
Right.
Well, and here's, let's talk about this amazing news that came out today. I think it's so important that people know this, that the incident of children getting type 2 diabetes during the pandemic doubled. And golly, that's a huge wake-up call for everybody. I mean, that means we should be changing the way our school lunches are. We should be changing the way we plan meals for our families. It just makes this kind of diet that you're talking about here, which is no sugars, low carbs, very little animal fat. These are the important things to know.
Well,
right?
the book is whole food, plant-based eating, which is, you know, it's becoming mainstream now, really.
Right.
And the medical community that is interested in matters of food and nutrition is now coming around and coalescing around what's good for everybody. And of course, there are going to be variations in this, but essentially, it's what I base the book on, which is whole foods and plants. And if you're going to eat critters, make sure you know who they are, where they came from, who raised them, what they ate, because that's what you're eating.
Right.
And so
we were just talking about this yesterday, how important it is to have happy cows. I mean, this is, which is so not happening in the real world. Nope. So there's just horrible tweets these days about these people who are factory raising cattle and factory raising chicken that are full of hormones and that are terrible for you. Whereas free range chicken, free range beef is so much better for you on multiple levels
and better for the environment. So much better for the earth. The pollution that has come out of factory farming is a horror show.
Oh,
it really is. And
the waste.
It's such a waste. And so this, and I had a conversation yesterday with someone about what we are feeding seniors in assisted living homes or in hospitals. And it's, you know, they're getting Ensure. They're getting sugar.
Canned sugar. Yeah.
And real donuts, real, I say, you know, ordinary, full of sugar and absolutely no nutrition.
Right.
No nutrition.
Yeah.
So
this is an easy alternative. I want to emphasize fun too, because this book, as I have mentioned, is fun to read. You have a great sense of humor that comes through in this book, but also these recipes are so doable. I mean, as a person who just, you know, I've only been cooking for a few years, honestly, and I could easily do these things. And so if you just have a mixing bowl, if you have a good sharp knife, if you have a, you know, immersion beater, I mean, you've got everything you need, right?
I do have lists in the front of the book about the things that I suggest for your pantry, the food items that you can have just always in your pantry, and the tools that you need. They're inexpensive, they're simple. They're probably things you already have, or you can get at the thrift store.
Yes, the thrift store is always a resource. Is the thrift store, at least for the mixing bowl, you know?
Right. And I am not a fancy cook at all. I'm impatient. I'm messy. Mm-hmm. I'm always in a hurry to do everything, and I don't mean that in a way that you should emulate. I mean, that's just that's a little self-criticism, but. Cooking should be fun. It should be a family or a community event with any luck at all. And I define family as just whoever you gather around you. And you.
Yeah, your roommate and the person who lives downstairs, whoever.
Food is better eaten in company.
Right.
And it actually, I mean, there's studies about this. If you want the science, it's there. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you can do for yourself to make yourself healthier is to eat in communion. With people. And that can be the most ordinary thing. That can be knocking on your neighbor's door and saying, I made some muffins, Mrs. Murphy. Would you like to have some tea with me and have some muffins? You know, it can be so easy, but we have gotten away from it.
So yeah, I think one of the things that I learned too is that conversation is good for digestion.
That's a great way to put it.
You know, it really is, because you're eating more slowly. You're chewing, you're contemplating, you're talking between bites. And honestly, the food goes down better when you're feeling good with another person nearby.
And you bring up something else that I talk about in the book, but I'm so interested in, and I love sharing this with families. Families now don't have table time with their children.
Right.
And I think that's a huge mistake because yes, you're rushing off to Mandarin lessons. Yes, you're rushing on, you're going to soccer. Yeah, your kid's a baseball player. Yeah, you've got, but where you learn culture, where you learn how to speak, where you learn how to negotiate, where you learn who your parents are and who you're, that's at the table.
It's so true.
It is at the table.
Well, and that's where you learn, you know, what not to talk about, what to talk about. In our family, we spoke about nothing but religion and politics, which made it really hard in college. When I found out, oh, that's not what you're supposed to talk about.
Well, we talked about business at my home when I was growing
but
up.
But you did learn manners. You learned that you gave each person their turn to talk.
Yeah.
You know, But you also learned about cooking and food.
And you also learned how to hold your implements and cut your food.
Help with setting the table, help with washing the dishes, help with the family, right?
And this is another thing, a conversation I've had with so many moms. You are not your child's servant.
Right.
You are your child's teacher.
Right.
So when you get up from the table, you take a dish, right? You take stuff. Your children, I hope, are following suit. Everyone at the table needs to pitch in.
They learn their manners.
And I've seen so many families not making a thing of that. And to me, that's kind of the basis of civilization, that you have a responsibility.
Well,
right?
I think we you know, and I think one of the things that was true for me and probably is not okay anymore was we had to eat everything on our plate. And it was one of those things that I had to unlearn, right?
We all did.
Yeah. But I also, at the time, you didn't get big portions. You got what your mom could afford to put on the table.
Right.
And so, and she, you saw her slaving away, making it, you know, putting it on the table. Not forever. I mean, eventually then we got microwave ovens and we got all these implements and everything. And it's much easier now, to the point that it's like too many people are eating frozen dinners and getting way too much salt because of it and things like that. So it is good to actually show your kids how easy it is to make food. And that's another thing that's great about this book. You're seeing some fairly easy, fairly fast recipes that while the kids are setting the table or coming in and washing their hands, they can, you know, watch the cook in the family, whether it's the dad or the mom, you know, putting things together, and they can help do a few things while that's happening, and it all comes together. So they learn, hey, it's not a burden to cook.
No, it's just a thing you do.
It's just part of life.
And please do not send your kids away to college not knowing
how to cook
and wash their clothes,
right,
and a few of those things. It's so important. But let's talk about the brownie recipe, for example. That's one that I love to have people start with, because you throw everything in a bowl and you stir it up.
Yes.
And you can stir it up with a spoon.
Or with an immersion
beater,
which is easier.
Or with a beater,
or
whatever you have. And it's very forgiving.
Yeah.
If you use too much pumpkin, it's going to get a little cakier, still be fabulous.
Yeah.
If your frosting is kind of messy, who cares?
Who cares?
Right. And who doesn't love a brownie?
Exactly.
But when you've got them cooked, I'm gonna confess this right now. I have burned them. Yes, I have. I still ate most of them. I cut off the crispy burn parts and I ate the rest.
Well, what happened with me when I started making these, because I was testing the recipes, trying to see, is this easy? Which it turns out it really is. I was wanting it to be a 15-minute time, and it wasn't. It was more like 20, and I had to, you know, okay.
Ovens vary,
Ovens vary. And then I'd have my friends or my kids eat it, you know. How do you like it? Do you think it's good? And of course, everybody thought it was the yummiest thing ever and so good. And really, you can have it for breakfast?
Yeah.
And you really could. But because everybody ate them up, then I wound up making like another batch and then another batch. And it got to be so automatic. I mean, honestly, there's only a few.
If you have the stuff, you pull it out. And they freeze, by the way. Most of the stuff in the book freezes just fine.
Yeah.
And if you're living alone or there's just a couple of you, you need to be able to do that, put stuff away, pull it out later.
Which most people, you know, in the old days before the pandemic, people did a lot of cooking on the weekends, put things in the freezer so it'd be easier, you know, they could get it out and then they could just...
So the secret sauce, the magic that's in the brownies and in a lot of the other baking recipes is the brownies are made from nut butter, and I actually now make them more with cashew even than almond butter, which is in the book.
Well, almond butter is better for people who have nut allergies, because
often
almond is not one of the things they're allergic
to. And it depends on what's on sale.
Right.
Right. Because you can pay $6 or $7 for a jar of almond butter. You can pay $15 for a jar of almond butter.
That's true.
So I don't take that lightly, but the recipe calls for a jar of nut butter and a can of pumpkin,
right,
and pumpkin pie spice and egg replacer or egg if you prefer, mm-hmm, and some, what else is in it, Catherine? You've made it many times.
You have to have some monk fruit or some powdered
monk
sweetener.
Monk fruit sweetener, right. Yeah, right. Or chicory root.
Which is the great thing about monk fruit is zero sugars.
Yeah.
Which it tastes really sweet. It tastes just like powdered sugar, but it's zero sugars as far as,
so, you know, diabetics have no effect.
Yeah, you can have it. And then there's no carbs. I mean, very low carbs between pumpkin and almond butter, or you're talking a few carbs.
Plus, carbs aren't just carbs. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really important thing to talk about. People talk about carbs like they're poison. They're not. If you are eating whole food carbohydrates, you're also getting you're getting a lot of fiber, mm-hmm, and you're getting minerals and you're getting vitamins. You're getting a lot of nutrition that you need. When carbs are bad is when there's nothing really in the food but carbohydrates. And Wonder Bread is a thing people always think of, but
we call it skeleton bread.
Skeleton bread, right? But something that has no fiber, no nutrients, I mean, except some sort of, you know, bogus added vitamins or whatever they do, enriched stuff that they do. Mm-hmm. If you're eating whole food, then a carbohydrate is not necessarily a bad thing. And I am myself diabetic. I'm type 2 diabetic. So I care a lot about this stuff. And I do limit my carbs over a day period. I don't eat like 10 fruits. I eat 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. And I don't eat bread 3 times a day. I eat bread once, maybe twice a day. Mm-hmm. But I eat really good bread, which I talk about in the book, What Is Really Good Bread.
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't we talk about that for a second?
Okay.
What is really good bread? Like spelt bread, or does it have to be a special grain, or what is it?
No, it needs to be a whole grain.
Okay.
And it needs to be yummy. I mean, that's another thing. Everything you put in your mouth, you should think, wow, this is great. You know, eating.
I love that. I love that about the recipes too. I mean, you're here to make it taste good. It doesn't just have to be good for you. It has to taste good, make you want to have it some more.
And I've already confessed that I'm not a fancy cook. I'm really not a great cook, but I'm a great eater. I really love food.
I think a lot of us could make a claim to that.
Uh-huh. I love to eat. So I want to eat good stuff all the time. And for a type 2 diabetic, that's a little bit more of a challenge, but it can certainly be done. And it turns out that it's the way everybody should eat if you don't want heart disease, if you want to reduce your odds of getting cancer, if you don't want to feed the cancer you already have.
Right.
You cannot eat sugar.
Right.
In any form.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, this book has many things in it. It has good soup recipes. It has
Catherine, great.
Okay.
Great
soup
recipes. Excuse
and it also has great salad recipes, and it has great pasta recipes. I mean, of different
sorts.
Plenty
of savory food in there.
Yeah. And so it's important for people to realize that this is a book for your whole life. This isn't just a book for dessert.
No.
And it's one of those things that you can use every single day with every meal.
But the reality of how so many of us are living now, on two ends of the scale, people are sending kids off to school with food, and they're eating food when they get to school. But it's important to have, I love to talk about the form factor of a donut. When you put a pink frosted sprinkled donut in front of somebody,
a kid,
they're not going to say, "Mom, I'm not going to eat that." No, they're going to eat that. If it's full of vegetables and protein, hey, so much the better.
Especially if it's still yummy.
If it's yummy. So it's an easy way to get a nutritious meal into someone. And then on the other end of the scale, same thing. Seniors, so many elders lose their interest in food. Mm-hmm. They stop eating really enough protein, enough nutrition.
And it's important for them too. I mean,
super important.
Yeah.
So the smoothie recipes in here and the sweets recipes in the book and the soup recipes are particularly wonderful for seniors. They're very, you know, they're maybe something a little different in some cases than people have grown up eating, but they are good, nutritious food.
Well, that's the thing that I like about it. In other words, it tastes like a brownie.
Yeah.
It's still got the unsweetened cocoa in it, and then you put the monk fruit in it, and that cocoa comes through. I mean, it's a brownie. And so what you're tasting is a brownie that's good for you. And that's true for just about everything in here. I mean, what you're eating is something you're familiar with, but it's been put together in such a way that now it's good for you. Whereas if you were to buy it at a store, it's practically poison.
Yeah.
I mean, you have one page in here that I was looking at earlier that is the ingredients of a commercially available donut. And the ingredients go for the whole page.
In small type.
And they're mostly right. Unpronounceable,
yes, they
you
are.
Know, meaningless words.
And
right?
They're also colors, dyes.
Yeah.
That are banned in European countries, and we are pouring them into food in the United States.
Well, that's the other sad thing, is our whole politics is such that the lobbyists take over, and you cannot. I was just listening to something this morning about the fact, or maybe you were telling me, lobbyists don't allow you to put teaspoons of sugar as part of the ingredients. You have to use grams because nobody understands that means.
That's right.
Whereas if you put teaspoons, people would be appalled.
Right.
They would actually be aghast that this is what they're eating. And so because of lobbying, they're not using teaspoons.
Well,
they're using grams.
We are reaping the harvest of 70 years now. Mm-hmm. Of misinformation about food. And before that, I don't know. There was crazy stuff out there too. But the food industry that we know today got its start in the 40s and 50s, and it has become a science. Palatability, craveability is the word that's used. And there are a couple of really great books that are out now on the subject of the food companies that have hundreds and hundreds of scientists who work on nothing else but how to make chemicals taste yummy to people.
Yeah.
And that's what you're eating.
I know.
If you buy something in a package or a can at Safeway, that's what you're eating.
And like so much else in this country, we're being run by corporations.
Yes.
Because these guys have lobbies, and they won't allow the FDA to change its rules on how you list ingredients to make it more understandable to people, because that's bad for the corporations.
Right.
And that's the kind of thing that we are all kind of looking up around us and saying, oh my gosh, this has become really unhealthy for us. These corporations don't care about our health. They care about just how many donuts can they sell.
And
at what profit.
Right.
Yeah.
And the idea of sugar-free. And I've been talking about this for a long time. I've been writing about it for a long time. And I cannot tell you how many people have given me that look because people just don't believe that food can be good without sugar.
They need to try the brownie recipe, honestly, just once, because although, yes, monk fruit is, it's not available everywhere, it is somewhat expensive, you're not using that much of it. And if you put this together and make a dozen donuts, or in this case, brownies, you're going to realize, oh my God, this really does taste naturally sweet. There's no aftertaste. It just tastes sweet.
And you're bringing up something that I don't have myself a research paper that I can publish on the matter, but there is some research to this effect. When you eat food that is not sugary, that's not amplified in sweetness, and that is very densely nutritious, you can only eat so much of it. So
because of the full factor?
Because of the full factor. And so I would love for all of y'all out there who are going to eat these brownies and eat other brownies to let me know what you think. It seems to me...
And how would they do that? How can they get a hold of you?
LynnBowman.com. Thank you very much. It's LynnBowman.com. Mm-hmm. And right in there, there's contact information. You can send me a note. You can also find me at on Facebook at Lynn Parmeter. Sorry, that's complicated. Bowman. It's LynneParmeter. Bowman. And that's, anyone can ask questions, participate in the conversation on that Facebook page. I'm also on Instagram, of course. Mm-hmm.
Same. Well, you have to be if you've got to have pictures of donuts.
Yes. Well, and you can't publish a book today without just being all over social media.
That's right. That's interesting.
Which is, it's just part of the
deal. It's a different world that, you know, you have adapted to extremely well.
I'm trying.
I just can't do it.
I'm trying. But this point of how much of something can you eat? The craveability scientists don't just want you to like that first donut. They want you to eat 10.
Yeah.
They want you to eat the whole bag of Oreos or Doritos.
Oh, wow.
And guess what? You do.
Yeah.
You have. I know you. I know you out there.
Yeah,
I know you've eaten the whole bag.
And this is true for, because they just continually increase the amount of salt, the amount of sugar, the things that make it, you know, it's gratifying and something you crave. But if you have real fiber, if you have whole foods and whole grains, if you have real food,
you literally cannot eat.
You can't eat
as
much
of it.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of research actually about how addictive sugar is.
Mm-hmm.
And it
we're meant
is,
to eat it. We're like little bees. We want to go around and get all the sugar.
It is more addictive than heroin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is easy to toss off.
It's scary to think about.
But people, you're feeding it to your kids every day.
Which has to stop. And people don't realize how negative that is for our health, how really destructive it is for our health. And these statistics kind of bear that out. I mean, we really have to learn how to feed our children different food, especially when they're not active. Because one of the things that happens when you're really active is your body, your muscles are able to absorb a lot more sugars because you need all that energy. But if you're a lump on a couch and you're just watching TV or involved in social media, you are just really wearing your body out with the sugar that you're feeding it. And it slowly destroys it. It really does.
Another really important point, because people don't really understand the deal with type 2 diabetes, and that is that it is a silent maimer and killer.
Yeah.
The worst part of it even is not that you die prematurely, it's that you're, after being a type 2 diabetic for a long time, if you're out of control, if you're not controlled, your organs just disintegrate.
Your arteries disintegrate.
Right.
Everything becomes weaker. Your blood vessels become weaker and your nerves atrophy.
Yeah.
You don't feel pain, or you feel constant pain because your nerves are out of control.
So a lot of people get their first indication that they are really having problems when they have memory issues, when they have, when they lose feeling in their fingers and feet.
Sugar is bad for your brain, people.
It's very bad for your brain.
And until you realize that, you know, you realize that the only reason you have food that is full of sugar, you know, in real life, I mean, if you were like a warrior or something and you had to be out there really being very physical all the time, like farmers used to be, or like, you know, real warriors used to be in the native tribes, then, yeah, if you had some a little bit of grain here and there, a little bit of sugar, yay, you could use that. But we're sedentary, and the sugars then just help rot our system. I hate to say it like that, but that's really what's going on. It's really degrading our tissues, and that's just...
So another little bit that I learned at the Plantrician Conference in 2019, they were fascinated with some new studies that have been done on the most addictive foods and from prepared foods. And can you guess what the most addictive prepared food?
Potato chips?
Pizza.
Oh.
Pizza. And I can see the whole country right now nodding their heads in agreement. It's like, yeah, if you could just have one thing right now, you're hungry, you just need, because everybody can get pizza. You can have it delivered to your door. You can grab it down the street. It can be in your freezer. So the difference between the way people were eating in the 30s and 40s, even the 50s, they couldn't get their hands on these foods all the time. And now it's in your face all the time. There's a Starbucks. There's a donut shop. There's a pizza place. And you can dial it in on your phone and have it in your hands almost instantly.
And in most truck stops or most gas station stops, like if you're on Highway 5 traveling somewhere, it's a little gas station surrounded by just those things.
Yeah.
You know,
Mickey D's and
donuts, Starbucks, those things.
Yeah. So the difference is that people have kind of lost that connection between food being something that requires some effort. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to grow something.
You know, here in Pescadero, we do grow pumpkins and we can make pumpkin.
You bet.
And you know, we have a lot of gardens around here and a lot of farms. And so we can go to the farmer's market and we can get this stuff. So I did want to ask you about that. I mean, some of this is jars of almond butter and cans of pumpkin, but how hard would it be to just make pumpkin? We could just make pumpkin.
It's a cinch. And in fact, and I do talk about that in the book. I don't think I actually give the recipe for that. Note to self, next book, or maybe next
But
post.
It's simple. I mean, you just take out the pumpkin, the seeds out of there, and then you've got the rest of
and
it.
And you can bake it. You can cut it up and stew it. It's super cinchy. It's a squash. Pumpkin is a squash. And so you cook it essentially the same way that you do a squash.
Right.
But then you can also take the pumpkin seeds and roast them. Just put them in a hot oven with a little bit of salt.
And they're so good. They're just a snack.
Good. Yeah, they're really, really good. But I'm glad that we're talking about growing food because, and this is kind of political in a way, but I think it's victory garden time. I mean, I really think, I mean,
it's
prices...
True.
Prices of food are going through the roof. And people who are food insecure, which is a new term, but...
Which glosses over the word hunger, because that's like too scary.
And frankly, I think we're all food insecure in some way or another. I mean, it's a thing that we have to live. So we think about it a lot. But anyone who really wants to do something right now, to take an action that will make a difference, that is not a sacrifice, it's a good thing for your family, for you, it's healthy, it's good at, grow a garden, rip your lawn up, take anything out of, if you own a home that involves just a little bit of land at all, if you don't have land, grow pots.
Yeah.
Put seeds in pots.
You can, and actually, here's what the native people here used to all over North America, they grew this family of squash, beans, and corn.
Right.
And that was...
The three sisters.
That was everything.
Yeah.
And that was your core. And they grow together. And they're so easy to put together. They help... This is organic gardening at its most basic. Right?
And can we also throw in there that it's very zen? Right?
Well, gardening is very zen, but there's some people who are like, oh, I'm way too busy to garden. But the great thing about these three things, the squash, the beans, the corn, they practically grow themselves. I mean, you do not have to pay a lot of attention to these things.
However, those are three crops that basically take a little bit of land.
Yeah.
So, but in a pot, in a good-sized pot, you can grow tomatoes, you can grow lovely greens, you can grow herbs. And they all smell good. They look pretty. Just there's so many ideas. And of course, you need to have as part of your family a nursery somewhere near you where you can go in and say, what's good now? What, you know, and what's easy?
And go to the farmer's market.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the thing that's so great about the farmer's market is you are supporting your local farmers. You're getting a sample of all the good stuff that's grown right where you live.
Yes.
And for us, it is right where we live because we're surrounded by organic farms and we're so blessed because of it. But you can go down there and get just a multitude of different sorts of squashes and different kinds of lettuce and different kinds of even flowers. I mean, they sell flowers there. I mean, it's just, it's gorgeous and fun to go walking around and just get what you need. I mean, you might have to go to a store to get, you know, your potatoes or something that's you know, a big vegetable, sweet potatoes, things like that. But all of the lettuce, all of the tomatoes, all that stuff, buy it when it's fresh. Get it from the farmer's market.
Which brings up the dirt. One of my favorite
the
things.
The dirt on what, shall we say?
The dirt. one of the things that was quite surprising to me in my research for the book, when I was putting nutritional values on everything, all the recipes, I didn't want to do it. It's a pain in the patootie, but I was convinced that if I was talking to diabetics or people with kidney problems or whatever, you really need to have nutritional values on the recipes so that you don't overdo your sodium.
Or potassium.
Or potassium, right. Exactly. So I bit the bullet and put with, I must say, Jessica Duncan helped me with this. Thank you, Jessica, if you're listening. And I want to talk more about Jessica and Erica in a minute.
And shall I mention that we are talking to Lynn Bowman, the author of Brownies for Breakfast, which is available now at Amazon.com.
Thank you. So what I learned was that, and this came out of research, absolutely research, that nutritional values vary as much as 8 to 10 times from, for example, 2 carrots grown in 2 different fields with different kinds of dirt will give you 2 different sets of nutritional values.
Oh my God.
Which
I had no idea.
I know. We don't think about it. But when you do think about it, you think, well, that makes sense.
In a way, because that's
because
what they're eating.
Because they're live things.
They're eating the dirt. So
yes.
Yeah, this is what they get their food from.
And so when we talk about organic, it isn't even enough to say, or you need to buy food that was grown in good dirt.
Right.
In rich.
And not just with no pesticides, but really rich loamy dirt.
Well, right. And depending on what the food is, there are foods that can grow in poor dirt, but it needs to be dirt that has not had poison in it for a long time, that right. has a biome that's appropriate, and so on and so
meaning
forth.
Meaning has all the little bugs
all
and
the critters
bacteria and stuff
beneath,
in it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's extremely important, and if you talk to the farmers at the farmer's market, they will tend to geek out with you and enjoy talking with you about their dirt.
Well, and this is kind of where permaculture comes in too, because
absolutely.
You can constantly improve your dirt, right?
You can
enrich it by
right.
having certain rotated crops in
right.
there and getting nitrogen from the beans that you're growing. I mean, that's the great thing about these three sisters, the corn and the beans and the squash, is they give different things to each other to help the nutrition process along, and they are enriching the dirt that the other one needs. It's really an interesting combination.
And here's another simple thing that I learned that I was sort of a head slapper, that you should never see bare dirt. When you see dirt that's been tilled.
Oh, I see.
And everything has been taken off of it.
Right.
That dirt is losing its value every day, and it's blowing away.
Well, this is the thing that it's so interesting. I was talking to somebody from Tomcat Ranch who is a dirt expert.
Well, they're regenerative ranchers.
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
And so they were talking about, and I've learned this in other places too, tilling the soil is a way of releasing carbons. But if you're actually planting things and putting them into the soil and you're enriching the soil
right.
with the organic material that was growing on it, then you are sequestering carbon. So good farming techniques are good for the climate. Tilling and other kind of wasteful farming techniques are actually releasing carbon. And apparently agriculture is a huge source of
right.
carbon.
And they're depleting the soil.
Yeah.
So I know I've made that trip up Highway 5 from LA to home so many times. And invariably you'll be driving along and you'll see one of the big combines out there ripping up the soil, and you'll see these clouds of dust going
right.
because, of course, it's a very dry area.
Yeah.
You'll see these clouds of dust, and it's just heartbreaking for those of us who care about these things.
Or if you've ever seen Ken Burns' thing about the Dust Bowl, oh my gosh, then you realize, wow, this was a dumb thing to do.
It is such a dumb thing to do, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to talk about another aspect of the farmer's market, and that is that I have two now friends, women who have been working with me to test recipes and read the book with me and so on, who have both started businesses. One lady had already started her baking business, but and she was making low-carb baked goods, but she added my recipes to her line.
For donuts?
To have sugar-free donuts.
Oh my gosh.
For people. She is in Sassoon City, California.
We're
near
not
Vacaville.
Traveling that far. Can we get somebody here to do that?
You know, there are some times when you would get in the car and drive 2 hours, right?
I'm to not have. Sure.
And I can tell you that they are the most wonderful baked goods
wow.
you've ever eaten. They're just divine. So, and then in Southern California, Erica Hernandez, same thing. She started her business from my recipes. And out of her own kitchen, she doesn't have a bricks and mortar store, but she sells at the farmers markets in Southern California and sells out. And I wow. talk with her every other day, but wow. she's making a wonderful living.
Wow. This is so important to know.
Selling sugar-free donuts.
Oh, if only we could do this. I mean,
we could do that. And I'm so proud of these girls. they're not girls, they're women. You know, because I have sort of the heart and soul of a business person. Mm-hmm. And I love talking about that stuff. And I love ROI and
I love
margins
and promoting new businesses. If somebody around here would do this, golly, I would be right there helping them out.
I hope we can do this here.
Yeah.
Now that I have the book out and I'm refocus on community a little bit
more.
Well,
one of the things I discovered is a lot of these people here have a lot of the organic farmers. They go to farmers markets all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, Palo Alto, Oakland, San Francisco, yeah. Portola Valley, you name it, all over the place. And that is a lot of how they get their produce out into the world.
Yes.
Right? And so to have somebody from here actually going to farmers markets and or, you know, adding their donuts to somebody else's wares as they sell them, I think that's a very viable option for somebody.
Well, I did the math.
Mm, good.
Of course I did the math. And if you manage to sell 100 dozen donuts in a day, which you could do, with 20 customers who were getting 5 dozen donuts, which is not a lot for a coffee shop, let's say, to sell. If you could sell 100 dozen donuts for 5 days a week, there is enough profit in it that you would be taking home, are you ready?
Yeah.
In 1 year, $1 million.
Wow.
Selling donuts.
So you've worked out the cost of the ingredients,
yes.
the cost of making them, and then the cost, I mean,
yes.
the selling.
Yes, because this is a business you can do basically in your kitchen. You
right.
can also do it in a commercial kitchen. You can hire a kitchen, but it's a very low, what's the word? You don't, it's just you, essentially.
And if, right, there's and no if, big investment going
there's
in.
There's no big investment mm-hmm. going on. If
so
you have
low
your,
capital. In
low
front.
Capital. Yeah. If you have your kids involved or your husband or whatever, mm-hmm. it's very doable. You don't have to make a big investment at all. And once again, you hold up a donut with pink frosting and sprinkles on it in front of people and you give them a taste.
Yeah.
They
there you go.
Are thrilled. And these ladies are telling me, the people are in tears. They're so grateful to come to a farmer's market and be able to buy diabetics, able to buy freshly baked, yummy sweets.
Yeah.
And as someone...
And you can make them vegan. I mean, you just don't have eggs. You can have
yeah.
egg replacer
oh, yeah.
and suddenly
oh, absolutely.
They're vegan donuts.
But as someone who... I've been diabetic since, what, the 80s. And everywhere I go, I look for sugar-free sweets. I
sure.
look for sugar-free candy. And they are so seldom
yeah.
available. And that they're great, yummy
the
things.
The thing is that they have... People need to really understand way more of us in order to prevent ourselves from becoming diabetic, have to start eating these no sugar or low sugar options.
Whole food, plant based.
Yeah. yeah, we have to be so careful yeah, about
yeah.
it.
The doctors who were at that Plantricians conference that I mentioned in 2019 told the most heartbreaking stories about, they were surgeons, many of them, and they talked about cutting open 9-year-old kids.
Oh God.
That whose veins were mm-hmm.
wrong,
just you know, covered with plaque and so on. And it's heartbreaking because it's preventable, it's fixable, it's doable.
It's all education, right? Which is what we're trying to do. We're trying to educate people about the dangers of eating sugar and carbs in our society because of the all the poisons that go with it.
Processed foods,
but also the lack of activity goes with that. You know, if you were exercising constantly, if you're a fitness instructor, maybe this wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be so bad to have our crazy diet, but we're not people like that. We are people who are much more sedentary than people used to be. We read, we watch social media, we're sitting all the time. We can't afford to eat sugar. We just can't.
But also, if you look at people who are performing physically at a very high level, they're not eating sugar.
Right. They're concentrating on protein and having whole grains and having really good food.
Right. Yeah, Everything that you put in your mouth should feed you in the deepest sense. Absolutely.
Wow. It is, you know, and honestly, the pandemic made it so much worse. And people needed this book a year ago or more. So it's so good that you're getting it out right now. I'm so glad that we're talking about it because it's so needed.
Thank you.
You need a section in there on, you know, advice to your high volume cooks, like the people who cook at the YMCAs or the people who fix lunches for the kids at school.
You know where the worst food is? The worst food is in hospital cafeterias.
Oh, wow.
It's awful.
Isn't that ridiculous?
The for-profit hospitals are feeding people horrible food. I mean, it's really, really shocking.
Yeah.
And one more note on the cost of making sugar-free donuts and so on. I think at some point, this is going to change according to which recipe you're using, but I think we figured that there was a margin in there of close to $2 a donut. I mean, they only cost a dollar plus each donut to make. What I am making on my hardback book from Amazon is $1.26 a book. So what kind of I should be out there baking
just
donuts baking. To heck with the whole book business and selling books.
That's so funny.
I want to get the donuts out there to people.
Of course.
So, but yeah.
But this is a great idea for people. I mean, very low cost to get into it. Just try it out. If you have a friend who goes to the farmer's market and you can't go yourself, hey, see what people do with this. Make a beautiful, you know, beautiful donuts to put out there and people will buy them. And
it's like any other business. You need to learn how to promote it.
Sure.
And package it and
how to distribute
all that sort of thing. And, Jessica and Erica and I have gone through iterations of what's the very best way to bake the, you know, what pans, what oils, you know, what temperatures, how long and so on. It's always improving these things. So if you did decide to go into a business like this, you know, you're going to have some bumps in the road, I'm sure.
Well, and hey, you've got some facts to share. Maybe, Eric, we should do an interview with you and Erica. And
I want to do that. I want to do some kind of a seminar with both of those ladies and show you the stuff and have them tell you the stories of what they've been through.
We could do a YouTube video for that. That would be so fun.
I would love to do that. I think they would do it with me. Right.
Yeah. And then we could see, you know, just sort of encourage people because getting the word out to eat good food and the fact that it tastes really yummy, it's fun to put together. These are important things to...
Do we have any time left?
Yeah, just about 10 minutes.
Okay, because I also want to mention that in the book, I wanted very much to make the point with anyone reading it, and it is intended, oddly, unlike a lot of cookbooks, I want you to read this. There's going to be a quiz. There's stuff in here I want you to know. And one of those things is that sleep and eating are absolutely inextricably entwined.
Right. Wow.
What you eat affects how you sleep, and how you sleep affects what you eat.
Huh.
And again, lots of studies done on this.
I did not know that.
And a lot of people don't make that connection. So what I like to talk about is that it's not just what you eat. That's important.
Mm.
It's also when you eat. Because our bodies are not meant to digest food in a 24-hour cycle. It's very much connected to the circadian rhythm. Mm-hmm. And so I have a personal practice, and I recommend it to a lot of people, and I'm seeing it now recommended more and more by the nutrition folks that are online. You should be completely finished eating by 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And I always get the most horrible look from people.
Well, I'm not working now. I mean, I'm working at home right. Where I can get home early. So that is something that I'm doing. And I think it does make a big difference.
It makes a huge difference. But the problem is that our social structure doesn't support that at all.
No.
So parents who have kids playing soccer, playing ball, sure. So on and so forth.
Don't even get home till 8 sometimes.
And they don't get home till 8 or 9. What I would want you to do is make sure that everybody eats really well in the middle of the day when your digestive system is working mm-hmm. and busy and ready to receive. And then eat again, something, a donut from the book, 3 donuts from the book, fine. So, you know, or some substantial amount of food, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe before their games, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then your body, when it starts getting late in the day, does not, it's done digesting.
You know, and I remember when I was playing racquetball every day at noon, I didn't feel like eating after that. I mean, if I ate before, it was great.
Right.
But not too much.
Right.
And I didn't want to eat after. I was just, you know, sort of, my body was, you know, just.
But and so much of it is habit. It's habit. Mm. And so many of us have the habit of slowing down at 6 or 7 at night, and then it's us, the couch, and the Doritos, you know, or the pizza from yesterday.
Doritos, oh my gosh.
Or whatever we don't have to fuss with that we can just put in our mouths.
And like pizza.
Like pizza, because we're exhausted, and we've had too much stimulation, and we don't want to work
anymore.
Which is why
people really do. I mean, it's smart for people to cook on the weekends and then right. allow themselves to just heat something up.
But if you make one change, well, two changes, because the first change is, please, no more sugar. That's change number one.
Yeah.
The second change I would encourage everybody to really try is stop eating at night.
Mm.
Eat earlier. Eat more earlier. Mm-hmm. And I don't limit how much I eat earlier in the day. I eat what I want mm-hmm. earlier in the day. But I'm done at 5 o'clock, even earlier if I can. I'm done, no more. And if you have issues with GERD, you know, with acid at night, mm. with there's so many things that will just disappear.
Yeah.
They stop being an issue if you stop eating when your body isn't in a good place to receive food.
And it really prevents you. I mean, one of the things I've read too about that is if you're eating at 10, 11 at night, and then of course you sleep, this is just, you know, I mean, it instantly goes to fat in a sense. I mean, there's just no, you're not doing anything with it.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about, because your body can't process it properly. It just stores it. It just puts it away. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a simplified way of thinking about it, but I would love people to really take that to heart as a thing that you can do and you can encourage with your kids. You don't want the kids taking food into their rooms at 8, 9 o'clock at night and munching on them.
Wow, that's a big one right there. And we should talk about food habits at some point, and maybe this can be a follow-up.
All right.
But yeah, we're getting pretty close to the end. So I just want to say thank you so much, Lynn, for your time on this. So Lynn Bowman has produced this amazing and wonderful book called Brownies for Breakfast. It's got great, easy recipes. It's full of fun dialogue. I mean, you want to read this book. It'll keep you chuckling and laughing the
whole
time. Catherine,
I want to tell people that there are dogs in the book and a weasel.
Oh, wow.
And other things, graphic things that are kind of unexpected. So that's important.
And it's got great pictures. And it's a beautiful book. So go on Amazon.com and look for Brownies for Breakfast. You will find it. And right now it's available as an ebook,
yes.
Right? And it's also available in paperback or hardback.
Right.
So, and just look at it. Just look at a few pages. I mean, it's amazing. And it's a really easy book to use.
It's designed by Elise Huffman. I want to be sure and mention Elise because the book really, I think, is beautifully designed. She did an amazing job on it.
Yeah, and I love the pictures. And, you know, I mean, the whole thing is really a work of art, but it's also just such a practical solution to our big problem right now, which is that we're all going to be diabetic if we're not careful. And we really have to start eating differently. You know, even if we're active, as we become more sedentary, and we can't help it, you know, because of the social media environment in which we live, we have to eat low carbs, no sugar.
And we can't afford to be sick anymore.
That's right.
It's just too expensive.
Hey, we're in the wrong country for that.
We are.
Right? Unfortunately. So, all right. So we're not going to get into politics, but we could talk about why there isn't a universal healthcare system sometime, but let's not right now. Anyway, so we have covered a lot of territory, and we'll probably have to have another conversation pretty soon because there's so much to talk about.
There is, and I think we should be doing this all the time. I've already told you that. It's fun.
Maybe we will. We'll see.
Maybe we will.
All right, so this has been a fun conversation, which I've really enjoyed, with Lynn Bowman. This is Coastside Conversations, and until next time, this is Catherine Peary at KPDO 89.3 FM.